So good morning and welcome to our priest and a rabbi, although today it is a rabbi and our physician, kind of looking at medicine and religion. When do they converge? When do they diverge? And it is with great pleasure that I have joining us this morning, Dr. Ira Perlstein.
So. Well, thank you, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be here on this very warm and sunny morning in Stuart, Florida.
Yeah. So we are thrilled to have you this morning, and really looking at some of the major challenges with both medicine and religion. How do we as human beings and physicians and spiritual caregivers, how do we approach one's spiritual and religious affiliation with the impactful and challenging moments of medicine?
Well, we need to understand that medicine and spirituality has gone back as a marriage together for centuries. Mm-hmm. It's mentioned in the ancient scriptures that spirituality actually was the father of all medicine. But in modern times, religion and medicine both converge and diverge. And let's explore some of those topics this morning.
Absolutely. So without further ado, we present this morning a priest and a doctor looking at medicine and religion. And we hope that you will find this impactful. If you would like to leave a comment, please do. We are available on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, on every single major platform that you have in the world. So please check us out, subscribe, download us, give us 5 stars if you wish. We really appreciate those. It makes our base much larger, but we are here for you so that, in any challenging moment that you go through, please reach out to us, and we take your comments very seriously. So without further ado, a priest and a doctor talk medicine and religion.
I thought you were a rabbi.
Did I call myself a priest? I meant a rabbi and a doctor. That one was for you, Father Anderson, for being on assignment. It is a rabbi and a doctor looking at medicine and religion.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart. Welcome to our radio program this morning on a beautiful, sunny, warm Friday morning here in our WSTU studios. We are a priest and a rabbi, although unfortunately there is no priest today, so I guess it's just a rabbi show.
Rabbi, singular, plural?
Rabbi, singular, but singular. I have a very important and very special guest with us. Just to kind of say to our listeners and our viewers that Reverend Anderson is on assignment today. He is out in New Orleans with a conference and something that I know he is very excited about. And just to give a personal shout out to Reverend Anderson on a very wonderful and important day of his birth today. So it is Reverend Anderson's birthday. So we wish him a wonderful and just amazing day. But today I want to bring on a very important guest with us. We have with us Dr. Ira Perlstein, who is a family physician here in Port St. Lucie and within the Stuart Martin County area. And we wanted to kind of look at the issues of medicine and religion. When do they converge? When do they diverge? But it is with great honor and very excited to have Dr. Ira Perlstein join us.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's good to be here on this sunny, warm, very warm Friday morning in Stuart, Florida. And I can't help but just chuckle at the name of the show a little bit, because what happens if a priest, rabbi, and a doctor walk into a radio studio? So we're going to find out in
Absolutely.
Just a few moments.
So Dr. Perlstein, what we've done in the past is just kind of like a check-in as we start, kind of keep it light. And, just to check in with you, how have things been with you?
things have been absolutely phenomenal. A few years ago, I gave up standard medical practice where I was seeing 30 to 40 patients a day and went into more of a direct primary care. A lot of people call it concierge medicine, but it's really direct primary care where I negotiate a fee with just myself and the patient. The advantage of that is I get to see a lot more patients. I get to give my patients a lot more specialized time. And time is very valuable in a patient's life as well as in a doctor's life. So I went from having 5 and 6 minute office visits where I would just pretty much put out fires into treating whole individuals, getting to know my patients a little bit better, getting to, we'll take care of that cough also before the end of the show. But I feel like I get to know my patients a lot better, both from a medical sense of the word, as well as, and we're going to talk about this, a spiritual sense of the word.
So given your decades of experience here in Martin County, the transition to go to a more spiritualized, a more direct approach regarding medicine with patients, was that something that had just come over the last few years? Is it something you've thought about over the last 20 or 30 years of medicine? Is it something that when you first started your medical career, that was something that was pressing, that I wanted to be able to spend more time as opposed to the daily rigors of physician life?
That's a great question. It evolved. It evolved over time. When I first started my medical career, I've been licensed in Florida since 1985. I finished my residency in 87, and then I've been practicing in this area since then. We did have a lot of time to spend with patients. Medicine has evolved into big business. And big business is about dollars, and time is valuable, and it's a throughput system. The more patients you see, the more money the corporation makes. I'm not saying that healthcare is necessarily bad. It's just not always as thorough as it was. And I think we're at a time in medicine sometimes where our technology perhaps has outweighed our morality. We can certainly fix problems. We can diagnose problems. When I started, there were no CAT scans. There were no MRIs. There were no exhaustive laboratory tests. We actually had a patient in front of us and a stethoscope, a little bit of lab work and some x-rays, but nothing like we have now. So the technological evolution has really changed how medicine is practiced. So about 5-6 years ago, I started thinking about doing a more comprehensive approach to medical care and the DPC or direct primary care approach has really taken off and been very, very good.
How has your faith, being Jewish, has that impacted your medical career at all regarding the access to medicine or your approach to patient life? Has Judaism filtered in to any of your decision making or regarding any form of personal care?
Oh, absolutely. I think most physicians, certainly not all, and I can't speak for everyone, but most physicians that I'm acquainted with yield to a higher power. And what Judaism has taught me is the ability to have more compassion with my patients. You know, the word compassion actually means to suffer with. The word disease actually derives from two words, dis-ease, ill at ease. And I think Judaism has helped me understand better my feelings towards illness and help me yield to a higher power when I don't know the answers to questions.
You know, it's interesting. When I was in rabbinical school, I took a class on Jewish medical ethics, a term largely coined by the then former chief rabbi, Dr. Emanuel Jacobowitz in England. And he had coined the phrase Jewish medical ethics, and taken this course, was taught by one of our rabbis, who happened to also be a physician as well. And one of the most impactful lines that I will always remember throughout rabbinical school is when she had said, a doctor's certainty is a rabbi's maybe. And it's taken 15, 16 years for it to really sink in and for me to think, you know, what does that really mean? And I think it goes and borders very much on the spiritual side. Is that a physician can come out and say, you know, given our experience with certain illnesses or certain diseases, you know, we tend to look at treatment as, you know, this, that, and the other. And it was just always impactful, just that phrase of your certainty, maybe my maybe.
Well, I think doctors are more scientists, and science seems to be a more exacting science. Certainly doctors don't like to be wrong, and we don't like to tell someone that they are going to get better and they don't, or they're not going to get better and they do, and we've all been chagrined and surprised by that. But I think if you approach medicine with some spirituality and the belief in a higher power, then that makes it a little bit more palatable when the science and the spirituality don't match up. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, we told a family whose father was on a ventilator in the ICU who had had a horrendous stroke, that there was just no hope, and we wanted to take him off life support. And they agreed.
Hmm.
And we all waited for this gentleman to die. And he didn't die. And he woke up. And he got better.
Hmm.
And he walked out of the hospital. And he came back to my office. And it still gives me chills to tell the story. And he said that he actually saw the face of God, who told him to turn around and go back. Your life isn't finished yet.
Wow.
So how can you approach medicine and not believe in a higher power when you hear stories like that and you read about stories like that, because they do happen?
Mm-hmm.
There are still the miraculous cures out there, and there are still the times where we are all just totally surprised.
Mm.
You know, the problem is they don't teach a lot of spirituality in school, and particularly when I went to school, there wasn't a lot of spirituality taught. And I remember the commencement address at my medical school graduation from the University of South Carolina in Charleston. We're going back here to 1984, and the address was given by a nephrologist. And at the end of her address, she holds up a stethoscope, and her comment was, as you go out into the world and practice medicine with your stethoscopes, and you put your stethoscope upon someone's chest, I want you to be aware what makes you a good doctor is if you hear more than just heart sounds.
Hmm. So that's amazing. I mean, when you think about it, in terms of
I think it is.
Being very clinical and being very science-oriented in terms of medicine and treatment, but being able to actually see the human side of it. You know, I have brothers that are doctors, and sometimes their bedside manner is not the best. Really hope they're not listening. But, you know, for them, I think it's also about that recognition of the human side, the humanity of it. Nobody really wants to be in that type of situation, but being able to have comfort, have a physician that is compassionate, one who understands, and to really be there. You know, for you, you know, Dr. Perlstein, do you see medicine and religion, do you see them converging? Do you see them diverging? You know, in which ways has medicine brought more of a holistic understanding regarding religion in some way?
Well, how many hours do we have to discuss this topic?
We can have as long as you want.
Okay. So, you know, we can see it both ways. We can see the role of spirituality in healthcare as being a very, very positive thing. And we can see, on the other hand, hanging on to the cloak of religion as being an impediment to good health care. For instance, vaccinations, heart valves. And let me get into that a little bit in a few minutes. But I want to just point out an article that I read just a few days ago. And it's not a new article. The article was actually published in the Baylor University Medical Center Proceedings in October of 2001. And the author of the article, Christina Puchalski, MD, is from George Washington Institute for Spirituality and Health. And she wrote this article, which I found to be absolutely brilliant. And she prefaces the article by saying that the technological advances of the past century tended to change the focus of medicine from a caring, service-oriented model to a technological, cure-oriented model. That technology has led to phenomenal advances in medicine and has given us the ability to prolong life. However, in the past few decades, physicians have attempted to balance their care by reclaiming medicine's more spiritual roots and recognizing that until modern times, spirituality was often linked with healthcare, that spiritual or compassionate care involves serving the whole person, not just treating diseases, that involves the physical, emotional, social, and spiritual part of that being. And such service is inherently a spiritual activity and not just an activity where you make a diagnosis and go in and see the patient. I thought that the preface of that article was very, very good.
You know, it's interesting given as you said, you know, the preface of the article itself in terms of, you know, your role as a physician, I mean, dramatically has changed in terms of it's not just looking at it from a very clinical perspective, but seeing a holistic approach. It's about the body. It's about the support network. It's about those who aid in the healing process or those who are there to support in times of great distress and
Absolutely.
Challenge.
To some, it's more about a mind-body connection, which we realize is being stronger and stronger. So to get back to your question, where does medicine and religion converge and where does it diverge? Mm-hmm. Well, this is where it converges, and we can point that out, and we can point out that in this article that I just referenced, that in 1992, only two medical schools taught or had courses in spirituality and healthcare. And in the early part of this century, in 2001, 75 of the 125 medical schools offer such courses. Wow. So it went from 2 to 3 medical schools offering these courses to 75 medical schools offering courses in spirituality, which was not just a short course. It was interwoven throughout the 4-year medical school curriculum.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because one of the topics I'd love to, you know, talk briefly about as well is full medical disclosure. You know, and I had read an article years ago that had said that back in the 1960s, it was something like 90% of physicians did not disclose full information to their patients. Where, of course, today the number is something on the complete reversal, something like 98-99% of physicians do disclose full 100% medical disclosure to their patients. In your understanding, in your experience, does that number shock you at all? That in the 1960s there was a huge push against full medical disclosure?
No, I think we had more of the father-child approach to medicine in the 1960s, where I'm your doctor, you listen to me, I tell you what to do, you don't ask questions. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's more of a congenial approach, more of a let's plan your health care together. I think that
so in that regard,
the medical legal issue of malpractice, if you don't fully disclose, affects a lot about what doctors tell patients as well, and they feel the need now to fully disclose, even when it's not necessarily in the patient's best benefit. But it's not about full disclosure. It's more about how you disclose information. It's one thing to say you have 6 months to live, go get your papers in order, versus you really have a bad disease, it doesn't carry a good prognosis, let's see what we can do to get you better, and in the meantime, let's explore the spiritual side of this, and let's make sure that you're comfortable and all your questions are answered. Let me back up just a second, because I think it's important to talk about where religion and medicine diverge also, and I wasn't able to answer that question very well. So vaccines are a big hot topic right now. There are the anti-vaxxers out there who just don't like vaccinations for one reason or another. But there are religious aspects of anti-vaccination as well. And I want to point out some specific examples, like the outbreak of measles in the Hasidic Jewish community in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Why was there an outbreak of measles? Are Hasidic Jews against vaccines? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But there are certain vaccines that are purified in pork gelatin. Mm-hmm. And the measles vaccine, or the measles mumps rubella vaccine, because it's one vaccine treating all three of those viruses, the MMR is purified in pork gelatin, and because Jews and Muslims other religions don't eat pork, they fail to vaccinate. Mm-hmm. And this is one area where medicine and religion diverge to the detriment of the patient rather than the benefit of the patient. Is there
a way that medicine could change in terms of not using pork gelatin and be able to maybe use, I don't know, fish gelatin or something comparable?
Perhaps. But research has not done that yet. Okay. And that might be forthcoming. Hmm. You know, rotavirus vaccine is the same one. The old rotavirus vaccine was also a pork-based vaccine. And the old shingles shot, the Zostavax, also purified in pork gelatin. Hmm. Heart valves. Would an Orthodox Jew or would a Muslim or a Hindu consent to a pig valve? Hmm. Probably not. But now we have cow valves and we have mechanical heart valves, even though the pig valve is probably a better approach in many situations. So we need to explore that.
So in your experience, let's say somebody comes in and says, you know, this is what I have and this, that, and the other. And your approach would be, look, have you looked at vaccinations and this, that, and the other? And somebody says, but it goes against my religious feelings, my religious beliefs, my ideals, this, that, and the other. I can't take that. As a physician, are you looking at alternatives? What would your position be?
You know, a psychiatrist told me a long time ago, never take away or criticize someone's support system or system of beliefs unless you have something better to replace it with. Mm. And guess what? You're not going to have something better to replace it with. I accept that. I truly believe in vaccinations. There's also herd immunity. You know, if you vaccinate enough people, then the few people who aren't vaccinated are also immune because they're surrounded by people who are vaccinated. Mm. However, when the anti-vaxxers start outnumbering the people who have vaccinations, that's when you see breakthroughs. Mm. I haven't had that problem with vaccinations in my practice. I do treat a number of Jehovah's Witnesses who have had fairly significant hematological problems, problems of the blood system, in case you didn't understand what the word hematological meant out there in radio land. Mm-hmm. But they have refused blood transfusions, and I've accepted that. Mm-hmm. Bone marrow transplants have been refused. Mm-hmm. Even using their own blood with what they call cell savers during surgery, Once the blood leaves the body, it can't be put back in, according to many of their beliefs. I accept their beliefs, and not that I necessarily agree with them. I accept them and respect them and honor their wishes, because I think that it's not just about me imparting what I want on my patients. It's about collaborating with my patient and creating a better doctor-patient relationship. And I think if that relationship is made better through understanding their religion and their spirituality, then overall we're going to achieve better outcomes.
And is that something that is more revolutionary now as opposed to, say, a generation ago? Because it just seems like a generation ago, it was very much based on the physician. The physician knows best. So therefore, as a physician, I'm going to tell you what your course of treatment will be, as opposed to, you know, what I'm hearing now is let's work in co-partnership to discuss a treatment plan that is acceptable and is more fitting for the selected patient.
Yeah. You know, the I tell you what to do, ivory tower approach, I think is going out the window to more of a collaborative approach, more of a compassionate approach, more of what can we do together, and let's explore the options that we have and come up with a plan that's best for both of us.
So, you know, just going back on the issue of full medical disclosure, you know, from a Judaic perspective, I mean, it's a fascinating argument because, of course, the rabbis, certainly back in the time of the Talmud, you know, we're talking a couple thousand, 2,000 years ago, you know, the rabbis had a very direct and perhaps even indirect approach. You know, we have two different schools of thought 2,000 years ago. One, the school of Rabbi Hillel and the school of Rabbi Shammai. And these were opposing schools of thought, two opposing rabbis. Rabbi Hillel, around about 2,000 years ago, had said, you know, you disclose to the patient in a way that encourages hope, in a way that does not put the patient in despair. So therefore, full medical disclosure, you know, not that he said it because it didn't really exist back then, but to be able to say, no, you don't fully disclose. Where, of course, the other school of thought, Rabbi Shammai, says, you say it like it is. There's no sugarcoating. It's this is the fact, and we need to try and deal with it as it comes. You know, the classic example these two rabbis give is regarding what does one say to a bride on her wedding night. And Rabbi Hillel says, it's her day. She is beautiful. She is graceful. You tell her that she is radiant today. And Rabbi Shammai says, no. If she is dumpy, if she's ugly or, you know, whatever, you say it like it is. There's no sugarcoating. But when it comes to full medical disclosure, it's just such an interesting argument that do we disclose everything to give the patient the full gambit and the full understanding of their disease, or do we cloud it in some way that still gives that element of hope? Because, of course, for the rabbi's perspective, hope is really one of the most important things that we can cherish is living for something, or that belief that perhaps my life may change in some way.
How about if we do neither? How about if instead we approach it from the perspective of, this is what you have, what would you like to know about it? How much detail do you want me to go into about your disease process, its treatment, its prognosis, how it will affect your day-to-day activity, and let the patient decide how much information they want. And that's the approach that I use a lot with my patients. It seems to work. Certainly in a patient that doesn't understand, in someone who is mentally handicapped, someone who doesn't have the ability cognate what you're telling them, then I think you would discuss it with their family and fully disclose to their family what's going on and have the family assist in making that decision. And that's the approach I like to use. So each of those rabbis, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi
Shammai,
had excellent approaches, but I think it's really more of a convergence of those approaches that really works best, at least in my patient population. Mm-hmm. And I think most doctors that I work with are doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And if we look at the challenges that, say, faith or religion play within medicine in terms of, say, if one refuses medical treatment or is challenged by it, do you see the divergence between religion and medicine as challenging, as something that let's explore together? I mean, how does that work for you?
Well, it depends on the illness. Mm-hmm. And let's take the psychotic or delusional patient, mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of psychiatric articles about religion and medicine and why religion and medicine should not converge. Mm-hmm. And I think for the psychotic patient, it may be bad. We all know the story about Moses and the burning bush, mm-hmm. about the voice of God talking to Moses, talking to Noah. If you saw someone building an ark today, we'd probably put them on mm-hmm. antipsychotic medication,
sure.
right?
Sure.
So if someone comes into the office and tells me that God or Jesus has told them to commit this heinous crime, I'm not. That's where the delusion comes in. That's where the psychosis comes in, and that's where their beliefs or their religion and medicine definitively diverge. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do what's best for their mental health mm-hmm. At that point in time. So that's a big area of mm-hmm. Divergence.
Absolutely. And it's just interesting to and I guess important to note as well that there is a big difference between mental health and certainly mental illness. I think the
Absolutely.
Understanding is we all have mental health. Just the fact of breathing and being human, we all have mental health that requires us to check in with ourselves and certainly to seek expertise.
Well, it's that still small voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you know, in your experience as a physician, have you worked with the challenge of to put your patient's needs above the needs of yourself, and not from a self-serving perspective, but in terms of seeing a condition, seeing what's going on in terms of a patient's development or challenge with an illness, and to not put yourself in it, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, the word compassion means to suffer with, mm-hmm. but you never want to impart, or I never want to impart my beliefs and infer those beliefs upon my patients. You know, here's a hot topic, abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's just throw it out there and, mm-hmm. and get it out there, because patients who have requested the need for pregnancy termination early on in my practice, for one reason or another, does not necessarily converge with what I believe mm-hmm. to be correct, but at the time I felt or continue to feel I have to do what's best for the patient. Mm-hmm. I have to meet the patient's needs, respect their beliefs, and make sure that my patients stay both physically and emotionally healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I needed to make a referral, whether it was what I believed in or what I didn't believe in, I felt it was my obligation to do what was best for the patient without imparting my religious mm-hmm. beliefs upon them.
Interesting.
Does that answer that question?
It does. Okay. It does. Thank you. You know, and we're just going to go quickly to a commercial break. And when we come back, just kind of explore that issue a little bit more in terms of abortion, because I think it's actually a fascinating one, especially Jewishly, how as Jews we approach the notion of abortion. And certainly, you know, if we take it even further beyond abortion, what as Jews we consider life and how that manifests itself. So we are going to take a quick break. And we do, if you are interested and would like to call in just on your take on religion and medicine, when do they converge? When do they diverge? How impactful is it for us? Please give us a call at 772-220-9788. That is 220-9788. We'll see you in a minute.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was What Do Women Really Want in a Man? And interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Welcome back, Stuart. Welcome back to A Priest and a Physician Walking to a Radio Station. We are discussing the topic this morning of religion and medicine, looking at how the two are compatible and the challenges that that separate both religion from medicine itself. And I have with me Dr. Ira Perlstein, well-noted and compassionate physician in the area who's been practicing medicine for many years here on the Treasure Coast. So, Dr. Perlstein, to go back a little bit as before we went on commercial break to talk about the challenges, especially as you raised with abortion, and especially given a Judaic kind of understanding. You know, and I'll use it from a Catholic perspective as well as a Jewish perspective. You know, both the Catholics and us as Jews, the traditional approach is very much the same, right? For traditional Judaism, we say absolutely not. Abortion is not permissible, unless of course the mother's life is in jeopardy. And at that point, you know, the rabbis had said, in that instance in and of itself, then abortion may be permissible. But if we take it back even further, from the Jewish perspective regarding life is when, as Jews, we are given both a body and a soul. Now, the body, as we know, in utero is forming and this, that, and the other. The Kabbalistic perspective, and for those that are not familiar with the term, the Kabbalists, they are... in Judaism, the belief of mystical Judaism, the kind of the hidden attributes of God that manifest itself through our day-to-day activities. So if we look at it from that perspective, you know, the Kabbalistic perspective is that, you know, we're given a body And as we exit out of the womb, birth canal, whatever, C-section, whatever, once that fetus takes its breath of air, of oxygen, you know, largely for lack of a better term, when the cord has been cut, at that moment, that fetus is given a soul. And body and soul equal life. So, you know, it's just an interesting understanding in terms of, you know, not to say from the belief from, say, a Catholic perspective of life begins at the moment of conception. Because as Jews, we do not believe that. You know, we believe that there is the potential for life. And I think that there's a big difference between life and the potential for life. And I know that there's a lot going on, especially in our own society and certainly around the country, regarding these very, very challenging issues and challenging discussions that are going on. But, you know, in your perspective and certainly through your expertise of seeing this type of stuff going on, you know, what is your approach to it?
You posed a very interesting point when you said that the Jewish belief is anti-abortion unless the mother's life was in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pose to you a question. What if the mother's life was in emotional or mental torment, which would propose a future danger to her life? Because that brings up a whole nother area. So we've got no immediate physical harm. We don't have to do an emergency abortion, pregnancy termination, cesarean section if the child is going to live. But we have time to think about it. But there's such emotional torment and despair.
And I think that that's something that certainly I don't think the rabbis fully understood or willing to recognize, because we know, especially today in 2019,
right,
that the stress on the body, be it emotional, be it physical, be it spiritual, takes a huge toll on one's condition. Right, we know that, especially with a pregnant mother, for example, we know that if she is overly stressed, that influences the growth and the development of the fetus growing inside. You know, and I think that there's, you know, it's vague, and I don't know if the rabbis made it vague on purpose, because the statement really is, if mother's life is in danger or in jeopardy, you know, what does that mean? Is it a physical jeopardy? Is it a like you said, is it emotional? Is it spiritual? I'm in conflict in some way with something else going on. So how do I rectify that in some way?
Well, we're not talking about abortion as a method of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about using, and I don't like the term abortion. I like to call it pregnancy termination. And there are many reasons when you would advise a patient to terminate a pregnancy. Future disease in the mom, horribly malformed or improper growth of the fetus, severe brain maldevelopment, heart maldevelopment, et cetera. There's a lot we can do mm-hmm. to fix a lot of those problems, but it depends on my patient's faiths and beliefs and what will be the best course of action for that patient, and it's got to be individualized. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I think it's important to know your patients and maybe take a spiritual history when the patient comes in.
Is that practiced today within medicine in terms of taking a spiritual or a faith-based approach in terms of learning or understanding your patient's religious
affiliation? Well, in my practice it is, because I have the time to do that. In mm-hmm. standard practices, it's not. And why isn't? Because the government doesn't reimburse for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to check the right boxes to get your reimbursement.
God may reimburse
for that. That is correct. The government right now does not. So I like to use a spiritual history. And going back to that same article from the George Washington School of Spirituality, they recommended an approach called the FICA approach, F-I-C-A. It has nothing to do with your taxes or your banking. But the F in FICA is faith and belief. The I is importance and influence. The C is community. And the A is action or how are you going to address the problem? Let me give you some examples based on Dr. Polchowski's article. The faith and belief, what gives your life meaning, and are there spiritual beliefs that help you cope with stress or difficult times? The I is importance and influence. Is spirituality important in your life, and what influence does it have on how you take care of yourself? Are there any particular decisions regarding your health that might be affected by these beliefs? C, community. I think it's important to ask, are you part of a spiritual or religious community? Mm-hmm. That provides support, particularly in the three areas of research that have been done a lot in spirituality and medicine. And we can get into those.
But is the follow-up to the community aspect from a physician's point of view, looking at it as you undergo treatment, do you have a support network? How can your support network support you in some way?
Absolutely.
So that you are not feeling in despair, that you are not alone through your transition.
Yeah, you've got it. That's 100% mm-hmm. comprehension of what that means. And then the A in the FICA is address and action. So what do I need to do as a healthcare provider with the information that's been shared with me? You know, doctors don't have to have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
People need to talk. And I think sometimes as a physician, if I function as a receiver of that information, then that provides adequate care and treatment for some particular problems. Not all, of course. But the faith and belief, importance and influence, community involvement, and what am I going to do as a physician to address those problems should be part of every medical history. Mm-hmm. If not, I don't really know my patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important that I understand that and what they want.
Hmm. Interesting. Looking at the importance and influence, looking at spirituality, how it's important in your life, and what influences does it take to take care of the body. Are there any particular decisions regarding health that may affect those beliefs in terms of a course of treatment or how things kind of work themselves within patient life?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We can start as early as 3 weeks of a few days of age with circumcision mm-hmm. and penile cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Penile cancer is not very common, but it's much more common in uncircumcised males.
Interesting.
Than it is in circumcised males. So we as Jews and Western civilization tend to circumcise more
mm-hmm.
than some other Eastern cultures or even Europeans.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And looking at it through your experience, do you feel that physicians today need to take a crash course on religion or faith, especially from a Western perspective, looking at the Western religions, approaches, ideologies, faith beliefs, looking at Judaism, Christianity, Islam, looking at it from that perspective in terms of learning more about patients' religious history?
No, I think they just need to be aware mm-hmm. of their religious history. They need to accept their religious beliefs, accept their spiritual beliefs. Mm-hmm. MD does not substitute for chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find here's another area where medicine and religion should diverge, at least in my opinion. I do not believe, and I'm going to state this firmly, that doctors should pray with their patients.
Hmm.
A lot of doctors do. And why don't I believe that? Because I believe that blurs my role as a doctor
mm-hmm.
and gives me the role of a spiritual leader or a hospital chaplain when I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
They are much better at that than I am. That is what they do. And I do not want to blur my role as a physician. I would rather welcome other roles into a team health approach than try to take on other imposter roles, which I should not be doing.
Interesting. So the separation of church and medicine should certainly be
right. We have separation of church and state. Let's have a separation of church and medicine, but let's have a mutual acceptance that all are needed.
And in your experience, have you called in chaplains? Or, I mean, if you're there at the, you know, if you're at any of our Martin hospitals or St. Lucie hospitals, I mean, certainly there's a chaplain on call and a chaplain there. But in your experience, have you had to use that resource, or is it more for the patient to access those resources?
I use them avidly. Mm-hmm. I call them in frequently. I believe that patients who have spiritual support and guidance have a better sense of well-being, mm-hmm. and they get better quicker.
And you know, just from a personal perspective, you know, the amount that you use of your expertise and your knowledge and everything else of the healing process, how do you find healing for yourself? I mean, you know, presumably as a physician, you see some of the most joyous occasions in people's lives, and I'm sure you also see very challenging moments that probably weigh very heavily on you on a personal level. How do you separate the two?
I think as a physician, it's important to be empathetic, not necessarily sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And that's how I separate the two. I think I need to understand what my patients are going through all their life cycles, happy events, sad events. We all have all of them in our lives. Mm-hmm. All of us will experience all of these events in one form or another. And it's important to understand that and accept that and understand that that's part of the life cycle. And you always want to be empathetic with your patients. I think when you become sympathetic with your patients, you tend to not function as well as a medical leader. And I'm sure you find the same as a spiritual leader. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you deal with that.
It's a great question. You know, years ago, somebody had said to me, and especially then it's a little off topic, not so much medicine, but looking at death and bereavement. And they said, Rabbi, it must be, does it get easier the more you do? And I said, actually, it's the opposite. The more I do, the more challenging it becomes. Whether I am helping a family who's grieving the loss at an early age of a parent, or even at an older age of a grandparent, or a sibling, or a child, I think as a rabbi, what we've had to do, and this has been going on for a long time, is in some semblance to put a veil, that we distance ourselves in some way so we can't make it that personal. I remember years ago, I unfortunately had to bury a very young child. And I remember saying to myself, I don't know what to do. Because Jewish tradition says this, and what do I do? And, you know, I called a very conservative rabbi where I was living, and I said, look, what do I do? And he said, you know what to do. It's in your heart. But it goes against Jewish tradition. Doesn't matter. It's about that family. And I remember unfortunately burying a child and trying to, as best I can, have that veil that said, distance yourself, because this is too personal and this is too emotional. And I remember the moment of this mother clenching her stomach that I will haunt me for the rest of my life. And at the end, I remember her coming up to me and saying, you know, Rabbi, you gave me such comfort and just such support that I don't know how to thank you. And I came home, and my wife had looked at me and she said, you look terrible. And I said, I need a minute. And I literally just went into the bathroom and broke down. And I remember saying to myself, I couldn't do that in public, because I have to be that strong spiritual leader for somebody. But at the same time, I am human. And these things that happen, you know, are very, very, very challenging and distancing in some way.
We need to explore this again. And I know we're running short on time, but I want to tell you the toughest thing that I do. It's not tough telling someone they have a bad disease process. It's not the hardest thing that I do. The hardest thing that I do, and no one ever teaches you how to do this, is walking into a waiting room where a family wants to know about their family member and telling them that they just passed away. Mm. That's tough. There's no easy way to do that. The reaction is always the same with the family. You can immediately see the shock, the dismay, the grief, the despair. All those emotions hit you at once, and you are the purveyor of, or conveyor of, that bad information that you just delivered. I think we may have to end on that.
So I think you know, and
what
I think
a horrible note to end on, right?
Maybe it's one of those things that we definitely need to continue the conversation, especially when we look at, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's kind of, you know, levels of grief. And
that's where spirituality definitely comes in, because those five things, anger, despair, bargaining, acceptance, they go back and forth. We used to think that it was just a stepwise process. They go back and forth, and that's where you and I can both really help those patients.
Absolutely. So Dr. Perlstein, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Rabbi.
I think this has definitely highlighted, at least for myself, I can safely speak for Father Anderson. We would definitely love to continue the conversation, maybe do a part two on it in terms of going a little bit deeper beyond the veil and going a little bit more into it.
So beyond the veil. Good title for the talk.
Absolutely. As we transition to the rest of our Friday morning here in Stuart, we want to wish you a wonderful rest of the week, a wonderful and impactful Father's Day this weekend. And if you are struggling with issues of medicine and religion, seek out Dr. Perlstein, seek out myself, seek out Father Anderson. We'd be more than happy to help you in some way as best we can on your journey as we go forward.